What we should do, we are going to first introduce each other, because we are meeting each other for the first time. The party is the member of the department. My name is Dumka Yuri. So I will be sharing your meeting for now. Until I'm told not to by my party. So for the time being, I will be sharing your meeting. I want to thank everybody who has come here, members of the department, and this is the beginning of a long road that we'll be traveling together, and hoping that in that process of that journey, we will cooperate with each other. It might not be easy at times, but there's no reason for it to be contradictory in character. So there's no reason for that. And I hope that both sides, the department and the side of parliament, will do whatever we are expected to do by from the side of the members, the people who have put us in parliament to represent them. We have to do what is expected of us to do. I know that it's not always easy, and at times you feel that the members are hostile. They are not hostile, we won't be hostile to each other. Whatever we are not happy with, we will convey that in a very I have to be very careful and selective in using words. But we'll do that in an acceptable way, hoping that we'll do the same. Where you see us that we are overstepping our boundaries, we'll do the same. And thank you. The department, I think the FNDC will take responsibility of introducing the delegation. But do us a favor, whenever somebody is speaking in the process of this discussion, tell us who you are, exactly from where are you located in the department, so that we get to know each other's names. We'll do the same as members of parliament. I thank you. Over to you, TJ.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Labour Portfolio Committee. My name is Sam Morotova, the Acting DG of Labour. With me, I have the group that is going to, the first team that is going to do the presentation on the conversation.
Mr. Muloso, if you can just read it. Dr. Mangi Mukala Sala, Mr. Vikash Jackson, and Mr. Martina Mudi. From the Unemployment Insurance Fund, we have the Commissioner, Mr. Kwasi Wood, Mr. Kuna Saudi, Mr. Delegate Ferreira,
Ms. Sonny Sampaka, and we also have members from the department, the Chief of Staff in the Ministry, Ms. Nonjonjo, Mr. Hubert Mashavani is also in the department. And we also have the, I don't see that the Mr. Joachim Kostic, not Mr. Schalke, where is he? Oh, he's sitting on the other side.
They too.
Okay, and then.
Okay,
and we also have the parliamentary liaison officer, Mr. Kon, who is present. And from the Umthombo Mbuyu Fund, National Youth Development Agency, as we did indicate that the process of merging is almost complete. We have the members of the board of the National Youth Development Agency and the CEO of Umthombo Mbuyu Fund, because they are now working as a team. That is why they came together, because of that process. We have Mr. Malusi Kekana, Mr. Jason Pillay. We will be joined by the chairperson of the National Youth Development Agency, Mr. Andile Lungisa, and Baba Nchoba. Thank you, chairperson.
Okay. Members, can you quickly introduce?
Members of Parliament, can you please quickly introduce yourself? We can start with Honorable Neville.
Can you please introduce yourself, members?
I'm Wilma Nyerukhan from the Western Texas ANC member. My sign language interpreter, François Baker.
Thank you. My name is Wilma Disham.
Good morning, my name is Andrew Lowe. Member from the DA.
Morning, I'm Ian Ollis, also from the Democratic Alliance.
Morning, my name is Eric Nyagamba from the ANC.
Significant JC from ANC.
My name is Sigile Kumalo from ANC.
Member from.
My name is Valise Peace, and I'm a member of the Freedom Front.
Okay. Do you have IFT? No. Okay.
We also have amongst ourselves members of the Parliament staff. Next to me is Mr. Kakaza, who is the committee secretary. Longeba Masanyana, who is the committee assistant. There she is. Oh, we've also got Cindy, who's a researcher for the committee, for the portfolio committee. Cindy, the members of Parliament must see you. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. I think now we can start with the business of the day. I'm told a person who's going to be starting is. Okay.
It's going to be very difficult for us to engage in discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We agreed yesterday that the department failed to supply us with material.
Mm-hmm.
But the chairperson
remember that. We said that agreed that that was the last time that they did so. that for us to engage and move properly forward and ensure that we emerge with the proper pieces of legislation, we should actually get this in good time. I don't know what I'm going to say in this meeting, because it's only when I walked into this hall that I was given this document. It has not been feasible for one really to go on and prepare. So that's why I'm saying I don't know what I'm going to say. This is wrong. We agreed yesterday that it was wrong. It's happening once again, Chairperson. So this is a major problem, and in actual fact, what one should be doing is to move out and go and rest and get this document and you know, go through them and come back when we are ready. This basically refers to the one Chairperson that even the people who are going to give us the information are themselves not ready. I wish to suspect that. And I may be wrong, but I'm convinced that that is the case. We are not ready, Chairperson. That's the problem. And you gave us direction, and I'm very happy you gave us a direction yesterday, that this would have to come to an end yesterday. But it's getting repeated. There's no respect at all from the people, from the department, the people who are supposed to give us this. Thank you.
Any other comments? Oh.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do agree with the Honourable Member Madisha, but I think before you see this meeting, there was an apology up front to say the department apologizes for submitting the documents or distributing the material late. So maybe the apology should have been for this meeting and to this meeting, because from the look of things, it's something that is packaged already. The meeting was prepared for, the documents were prepared for the last meeting and to this meeting. I think the mistake is for them to apologize for only one meeting. It should have been an apology for two meetings. Because what the Chairperson said just only yesterday.
Another member from the ANC?
Kumalone?
Nyekemba. Oh, sorry. My apologies. Okay.
Yes, sir. I think my proposal is damage has been done, but let's move forward. I will request an appeal
to some members not to leave the meeting. I think let's hear the presentation. We all share the same frustration in terms of receiving documentation late, fine. But I think it's important that for us to hear the presentation, and then the process of the presentation itself, we will give us some guidance in terms of, after the presentation, what is it that we think we can do as a committee. So my appeal is that let's allow the department to make presentation. Already, it has been indicated that this is not acceptable. I think this is not the first and the last meeting where the department has to make a presentation to this commission. Thank you.
Mr. Ollis?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hear what's being said, and I'm just concerned about Friday. We have another committee sitting on Friday. Are there documents that are necessary for Friday's meeting? Can we have them now instead of getting them again when we walk into the meeting on Friday? You know, I accept that, you know, we at some point need to accept an apology, but what about going forward? Where are the documents for Friday? Can somebody give them to us now? Can we read them tomorrow when we don't have a committee and prepare ourselves for Friday, and then at least we will start to act properly in the future? But, you know, I don't think we should just leave this and then we come on Friday and we have the same story. They put the documents down in front of us in the meeting on Friday.
Honorable member of the ANC who has just come in, the discussion, members of parliament are raising concern in relation to the documents that we have just received, some of them have just received, and yesterday it was the same problem. We asked for documents in advance and they were only delivered just before the meeting started yesterday. We therefore appeal to the department in future to bring the documents in advance so that we can prepare ourselves for the discussions that will unfold. And that's what is happening now. Now all the members have spoken, most of the members from different parties have spoken. Before I can give a ruling, I would want the department to say something. I do know that some of the documents were given to the committee about between four and half past four yesterday. The problem is that some members of parliament have not been given laptops, so members of the parliament have no laptops. Because in an ideal situation, when that information comes, then the members will get them immediately. Not saying that that is enough time, but since we started with the department yesterday, the 4 o'clock after I was spoken with them yesterday, at least was acceptable, but the problem is from our side giving over the documents to members. And I want to criticize the committee members. In future, even if you don't know the email addresses of the members, when you've got information with you, you must phone them individually and ask them how do you get the information to them, so that we don't blend up into this thing. But I understand because you deal with email. But in future, just phone them. Even if it's weekend, just phone them and tell them we are busy. How do we get it to you? The honourable member wants to speak. I haven't given a ruling. Maui, did you want to speak?
Sorry, I'm late, but I should think yesterday the documents on the compensation fund were in our pigeonholes, in the envelopes. I'm not quite sure which one were here. I realize this is the slide, but the real documents were distributed in our pigeonhole yesterday. I find mine in the pigeonhole. I don't know the rest. But there were big white envelopes in our pigeonhole yesterday, and they were there. And that last week also we had received something similar to this, but in the government gazette documents. So I'm not quite sure which one people didn't receive yesterday. But the compensation fund, because I read it last night, we did receive the document. Thank you.
Honorable Kumalo.
However, you decided, or maybe you are intending to give the ruling. One is convinced that the speaker that spoke and that the department is here to give the presentation. I should think that that opportunity must be received by the members of the committee. And again, the speaker that has last spoken recently, that is correct, that the documentation was in our all pigeon holes yesterday. Thank you.
Okay. No, yeah, it's okay. I think it's enough on this issue. You see, I understand that some of us are new. You need to check your pigeonholes. I'm sure all of you have secretaries. Members of parliament from all the parties, you must check your pigeonholes. If you leave at 2 o'clock, there might be some stuff that will be put in your pigeonholes after 4. So it means you must frequent your pigeonholes, because as I said, that they received these documents at that time. What they did, they put them in the pigeonholes. So what I was saying, in future, because some of the members might not be here, or some, I don't know, secretaries, they might be having problems with assistances. But
In future, when they come late, you'll be phoned, you'll be told that the documents are in your prison hold. For Friday, it's not going to be the same. Like documents for Friday, it is spoken to the department yesterday. So we hope that before the end of today, for Friday documents, they will be with us. At least I want that undertaking, because we have said, we have agreed, I can accept all these mistakes, because we are starting, and it's yesterday that we told you this is how we want things to happen in the committee. And we cannot be then harsh and say, you said it yesterday, and it must happen, because if you are late yesterday, then it means it's going to continue. But for Friday, we are not accepting it. We want them today, by the end of the day, in our kitchen hall, so that we are ready for Friday. So I agree that the department must continue giving the presentation. Thank you. Over to you, comrade, members of the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe just to repeat what we've said yesterday, and then maybe I must also indicate that maybe I should extend the apology I made yesterday to even today, because we received the invite to address the Portfolio Committee on Thursday, very late. We then convened everybody. We made them to drop all their plans to start working on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we finally discussed documents on Monday. And we, again, in speaking to the minister, that is why we distributed some of the documents that were tabled in the outgoing portfolio committee. And, Chairperson, we apologize, but we must also record that the processes have been unusual. We had the two commissioners yesterday with us. We left, I think, at around 12:30. For them to finalize all the work. And like other members have said, we finished some of the work around 3. We worked with your office, and I'm sure that is why some members got the documents, some did not. But like I said, we were trying our best under very difficult circumstances. For the Friday, I have spoken to the committees. I know the productivity essay documents came in. For today, I know that the Umsobomvu Youth Fund also had to consult with the National Youth Development Agency, and they had to also bind their documents, and that is why the chairperson and the other members of the National Youth Development Agency are here, because Umsobomvu Youth Fund could not come and present something to you without talking to them as well, and that also took its time because they had to conclude that process yesterday. So I must upfront also apologize on their behalf, because we did communicate and we know the circumstances, and we'll appeal to members to also understand, because we would have caused another problem if they did not consult with the National Youth Development Agency president. I think on Friday, most documents, I will personally make sure that I chase everybody, that all those documents are in and you receive them by today and tomorrow late. Chairperson, before the presentation starts, I must also indicate that the statutory bodies operate on a different cycle as well. Their presentations in terms of the state of the nation address or their strategic plan follow a slightly different cycle, because they are required to produce their strategic plan 6 months before the beginning of the financial year, which means that the strategic plan that is going to be presented now is something that was finalized and tabled around September last year, and now they have to, within the remaining period, adjust to take into consideration the state of the nation address, etc., and the new government priorities. But at the same time, they are supposed to finalize a new strategic plan, which is going to be tabled 6 months before the beginning of the financial year, which is going to be 2 months from now on, where we believe that the government priorities and the state of the nation address aspects will then be built into that, because already for them they've lost eight months there into their processes as well. So I just wanted to also highlight that aspect up front. Thank you, Chairperson. And Mr. Mkhonto will lead the conversation and presentation.
Thank you, Mr. CC. I think your explanation about the lateness of the documents is understandable, and I hope that the committee, the staff from Parliament, have taken note of what has been said, so that in future we have agreed that we want our documents 5 days before. So when these emergency meetings have to take place, certain things have to be taken into consideration, so that we don't come here and criticize people, yet we are at fault on this side. I thank you. Can we listen to the presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll be speaking on behalf of the Compensation Fund, which is one of the statutory bodies within the Department of Labor. Its mandate, basically, is to administer the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. This is quite an Act number 130 of 1993, as amended in 1997. The other mandate of this Act is to monitor the license conditions that are provided for the two mutual associations, which is the RAND Mutual Association, which is responsible for managing compensation for occupational injuries and diseases within the mining sector. And we also have the FEMA, which is the Federated Employer Mutual Association, whose responsibility again is to monitor that portion of the legislation, Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act, within the construction industry. So in South Africa we have three separate institutions that are managing this aspect of the legislation as per the FIDA Act of 1993 amended in 1997. These two institutions dated as far back as 1959, so it's quite an old arrangement that we're sitting with. Basically, to give you a background of the Compensation Fund, is that next slide. The fund provides compensation for disablement caused by occupational injuries or diseases sustained or contracted by workers. Or we also deal with fatal injuries that are resulting from either injuries or diseases. So we have a situation where that workers might be involved in an accident at work or during the course of their work. And for all purposes, the Compensation Fund is responsible for ensuring that they get medical assistance and that they are rehabilitated to go back to work. And we also provide compensation for loss of limbs. For example, if you're injured to the extent that you are not able to perform those functions that you were able to perform in the past. So we provide compensation for that aspect. The Compensation Fund is financed from levies paid by employers, and the arrangement is that the levies are determined by the risks associated with the sector in which the employer belongs. For example, construction sector, which is deemed to be the high risk, or the transportation sector, when we determine the levies that they have to pay to the commissioner, we take into account the risks associated with that industry and the number of injuries that have occurred in the past years to determine the premium that every employer in that industry must pay. So it's not a, a one shoe fits all. It's a different rating for different employers. As we said, that the revenue will consist of mainly from annual assessments paid by those employers who are registered, as I said, on the basis of fixed rate, and is determined from their annual earnings. However, I may also indicate that there are exempted employers who do not pay contributions to the compensation fund. However, when injuries or diseases are contracted in that environment or there are deaths as a result of those diseases or injuries, we do provide the administrative function to those employers. For example, the state is one of the employer who does not contribute to the compensation fund. However, they make financial provision within the state funding to ensure that once there is an injury or a disease contracted, the claim will be sent to the Compensation Commissioner for administration and adjudication to determine the liability that the state must pay. And the state will be responsible for paying all medical expenses, including the compensation. What we provide is just the agency function to do the adjudication. We also provide a similar service to municipalities who, on application to the commissioner for exemption, we do extend that facility to them where we do the administration. However, for the municipalities, unlike the state, we do require them to give us guarantees that they have sufficient funds to manage and compensate the workers. Because we don't want a situation where workers are injured and the municipalities are not able to pay for medical costs. So it's guarantees that we get from them. And the similar arrangement with the two mutual associations, we receive certificates of guarantee which are signed by the auditors annually to indicate that they are financially sound and will be able to manage and pay benefits. However, I must indicate that the two mutuals run independently, and they have their own infrastructure, and they do the administration adjudication on their own. The reporting framework of the compensation fund is as follows. We have the Minister of Labour as the overall head, with the compensation board, which is the advisory board. It's not an executive board. It's an advisory board that advises the minister on a number of issues relating to issues of the compensation. And then it has subcommittees that are responsible for different functions of the fund. For example, we have the Investment and Finance Committee, which looks at all investment issues, and they also monitor the manner in which we manage our finances, and they do make recommendations to the board to take appropriate decisions. We also have the Audit Committee, which is the committee that is created by the Public Finance Management Act, which also reports to the board from time to time on its activities. The current arrangement is that the Director General of Labour is the accounting officer of the fund. He is the one who carries the overall responsibility for ensuring that the fund is managed in a proper way. And then the Act provides for an official of the department in the name of the commissioner to run the operations of the fund on a daily basis, given that the Director General cannot be able to do that. So the commissioner is an official who is held responsible for day-to-day running of the fund. The vision of the compensation fund is to provide for occupational injuries, diseases, and rehabilitation of workers, and deliver continuous value to stakeholders. I must upfront indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that the element of rehabilitation is what we envisage that in the future is an area where we need to strengthen, because currently we're not very strong there. We are inundated with payments of doctors' accounts and medical service providers to the extent that we do not have mechanism to follow up to ensure whether the treatment given to that worker was the appropriate treatment and was it done in the appropriate time for that worker to go back to work immediately. So that's an area where I must upfront indicate that we are lacking, and in our strategic plan you will realize that we are also taking initiatives to try to address that particular threat. So at the present moment we are acting basically like a medical aid. We receive the claims we pay, and there is no daily focus on the work. And I think that's a weakness that I just want to bring up front. The mission of the fund is to develop and implement solutions to provide quality and accessible services according to standards as set in consultation with our stakeholders whilst maintaining the fund's liquidity. From time to time, we have a strategic planning session with the board, which is a tripartite board. It includes beyond the two stakeholders, labor and business, it also includes experts from the medical profession who also sit on the board to assist on issues relating to diseases that are contracting the work. And from time to time we do have plans for the sessions where we agree on certain deliverables between ourselves and them. The strategic objective of the fund is to provide an efficient social safety net to ensure that the fund is managed well financially to be able to have enough money to pay its obligations. And also we do indicate that we have an effective cash and investment management. We also in the process of engaging in reforms, management reforms to restructure the fund to be able to deliver on its mandate. And I think that's the area which most of yourselves might have encountered with in the different constituencies where you come from, that you'll pick it up, that the majority of beneficiaries who are workers are not really excited about this fund, I must indicate. In a sense that the emphasis has always been on the payment of medical accounts. And I think we have been very weak on the follow-up of those injured workers, because that aspect, we work jointly with the department inspectorate to be able to monitor that. So that is something that we are going to indicate our intentions as to what we're going to do to address that aspect. We also want to enhance quality of access of credit services and information. We believe that we need to ramp up this particular area, especially for the workers. We also need to ensure that there is effective data and information management. Currently, our systems are not effective enough in terms of providing relevant information upfront for us to be able to manage this fund well. So it's an area that we are also looking at. The challenges that we have in this organization are the following. Inadequate capacity, which results in delays in processing of claims. The structure of the compensation fund has been overtaken by events. In a sense that when the funds were merged post our democracy, the former TBVC funds and the main fund, what happened was that all the staff of the other compensation funds of the CSKY, TransKY, Botswana, and Venda, when they were incorporated into the main fund in Pretoria, the organizational structure of Pretoria never changed. They were just absorbed and put elsewhere to perform functions that they deemed necessary that they were relevant. So as a result, they didn't really recapacitate the organization to be able to take over additional responsibility that it had. So that's the current challenge that we're sitting with and we're addressing. The business processes that we are using are quite old. They date as far back as the 50s, if one needs to look into them. And most of them were job creation initiatives. For example, where you find that the capturing of a plane is done twice. So one person will capture a plane and then pass over the document to the other person to check whether the capturing that was done by the first person was correct. So that in itself takes time, given the fact that now we have many employers, over 600,000 employers, who have workers who are supposed to claim from this fund. So that in itself is a problem. The capacity of the IT services and capability to respond to the organizational needs is still lacking. We have a serious IT challenge there because our business processes are predominantly manual. That is why when you phone and ask for information, you will be asked to wait because we have to check with different people to be able to give you an answer. The IT system is not integrated for us to be able to give you information up front on the status of each claim. So that is one area that we need to address and ramp up. Non-existence of an inspection case management system for quite an unreported accident. For example, as I said earlier, we need to work very closely with the Department of Labor's inspectors to be able to access information. For example, if they've gone out there on inspection and they do find cases of accidents that were not reported, they're supposed to be logging them into a particular system, which at present moment we don't have. Our inspectors also have that problem. They go around with papers, booklets to write. So they have to come back to the office at the end of the day to log the information. So that in itself is a challenge. So you may find that they've been there on the ground, found incidents, but we don't pick them up fast. So we need to have a system that will allow for them to readily capture that information so that we can be able to contact the employers to get the incident reported so that we can follow up on the worker to ensure that they got appropriate treatment and that they are rehabilitated to be able to go back to work. I think that this also relates to poor enforcement of the legislation. I think yesterday Madam Zondeki did indicate that we have a serious challenge in that particular area of inspections and that results in the low enforcement of the legislation. We also have a problem in non-submission and delays in reporting of accidents by employers. And also, there is a serious problem in the submission of information. Because sometimes employers are reluctant to give information because of the lack of understanding of their responsibility. So some of them, they actually get scared. They think that if they report an accident, they may be arrested. That's the fear that they have. When in actual fact, the compensation fund is an insurer of the last resort for employers. So they shouldn't be able to have problems on reporting accidents. During the course of last year, we 2007, October, we did away with checks because we discovered that the compensation fund was still paying out doctors, medical providers, and workers with checks, where in actual fact FICA, to some extent, through the advice of National Treasury, that government departments were advised to desist from using checks because of the risks associated with them. So, and as a result, we did away with checks. And I think people are so used to receiving checks now. For them to be able to bring us bank details for us to pay the money to the bank account, we're still finding a lot of problems in getting relevant information in terms of the FICA Act 2007. to be able to pay money to the bank accounts of workers. And I must indicate also that with the doing away of checks, as we sit in the last audit, we're sitting with an amount of about 400 million that was not collected. Despite our efforts to trace the owners of these checks, we wonder why they're not collecting them. So we have a problem, but we believe that those who come and make themselves available and we're happy with the information, we do pay them. But I think what we're finding difficult is that most of the people are not coming forward. On the performance side of the organization, the progress to date, I've prepared a slide that takes us on the performance for the last 3 years on the payments to workers. You could see that in 2006 we have paid to 231,622,000 workers to the tune of about 655 million. Pardon me, I've rounded up these numbers. I didn't put the full detail of, but the full detail is in the annual report for that year. 2007, we paid to 335,000 workers to the tune of about 652 million. And in 2008, which is last year, the number came to 327,647 to the tune of about 630 million. I must indicate here that the number has come down, and there could be a number of reasons. One of them is the fact that we've done away with checks. Now, the requirement for submission of banking details could be one of the contributing factors in people giving us information to be able to pay the money to their bank account. That's one of the reasons. And the second reason are attributed to the processes that we're having. We do encounter backlogs at some stage due to the fact that we have an increasing number of claimants, especially from the medical providers, which also impacts on our capacity to deliver. So the next slide basically it shows the trends in compensating benefits that they face. That you could see that there's been a rise in 2007 and a decline in 2008. On the medical side, you will see that the picture is slightly different. The number of payments does not effectively represent service providers. It could represent number of claims. So for example, one doctor or hospital might submit two claims for the same injury. So what we've seen here is that in 2006 we paid 1.4 billion. 2007-8 was 1.2 billion. There's a slight decline there, and then we see also an increasing trend. These figures do not include payments by state institutions, local authorities, and the two mutuals. These figures relate only to the compensation part that resides in the Department of Labor. The graph follows basically a reflection of that in a graphical format. The next slide basically shows the distribution of payments to the different service providers who are providing services to the injured workers. You see that the general practitioners, because they are the first line of contact once an injury has happened, enjoy the most portion of the payments, and they are followed by private hospitals. Then comes the radiology services, your x-rays, MR scans, and then we have also other specialists, who neurosurgeons and the rest who come in the event of such injuries. Pathologists, about 5%. Orthopedics, These are the people who deal with replacement of limbs and legs and all that. So they consume around 6% of the medical expenses. And those numbers are reflected there. And physiotherapy is 7% of the cost. And my sense is that it's an area which maybe in future we may need to relook. It might rise if we could consider an integrated approach to treatment, whereby an injured worker, once is injured, the case is reported. I think the physiotherapy plays a very important role in ensuring that people are fully rehabilitated to go back to work. So at the present moment, we don't see that a lot. It's not that it's not much happening. So maybe something that is in the future, we may need to look into once we have finalized our policy on any return to work. The highlight that I can show is the payment that we have made and the benefits that we have made in 2008 and 2009, and also you notice that we have collected 3.9 billion. These figures may change as soon as the annual audit is finalized, because these figures are now sitting with the auditors. So they might change once the auditors have finished their audit. At the moment, we're sitting with around 4 billion rand that was collected, which indicates an increase of about 15% from last year. So that's number 7% is wrong. It's about 15% from last year. We also seen a growth in our investments from 18 billion to 21.4 billion. We've also, during the course of last year, the Minister of Labour approved the interim structure, top structure of the organization, because we felt that we needed to beef up the top structure to be able to address our challenges whilst we are embarking on a fully fledged organizational development review to determine the appropriate structure of the compensation fund. So what we requested the minister to do was to give us approval for the top structure, which we have now filled about 70% of that. In total, we asked for about 4 executive managers in finance, 1 in HR, 1 in organizational development, and we also asked for 1 in medical, and 1 in internal audit. So we have 8 executive managers that we have asked for, and we've also requested about 16 managers to support these people so that we can be able to deal with the issues that are facing us at the present moment. So that we have, 70% of that has been filled, and I think in our last presentation to the portfolio committee, we did indicate some of the challenges we're experiencing, especially in regard to the near clearance and the verification of qualifications. But I think we've been able to speed that one up now, so we're filling it up. So we hope that by July, the top structure should be fully in place. And we are envisaging that by the end of March next year, we are in the process of appointing a service provider to assist us with finalizing the whole structure, appropriate structure of the organization. So we hope that by March next year, that process will be finalized. We'll be having a fully fledged establishment of the compensation fund that takes into account the workload and the new business processes that we are proposing. We have also finalized our IT blueprint, which indicates the new future processes, how we want to do things. We believe that the medical aids of today are no longer pushing paper like we do. All claims are sent electronically from the doctor's treating rooms. And the machines are doing the processing. So we would like to eliminate the paper that we get. We are receiving currently over 22,000 documents a day.
and all these documents have to be seen by human eye, captured into the system and finalized. So that is not helpful. So we believe that if we automate this, we'll have less of paper coming through. And we also have finalized policies, because the organization did not have financial policies. Most of the policies were instructions, secular instructions that were prepared by different managers. So in terms of the PFMA, we are required to have policies in place. So we have finalized the policies. They've been approved by the board and are now in implementation phase. As I've indicated earlier on, we also introduced the electronic payment mechanism, which means we paying direct into the bank accounts of our clients. We're no longer paying by check. That system is fully operational. We also finalized the orientation of new board members, because we just have a new board members appointed as of September last year. So we have a new board, so the process has been done. And I must also indicate that we have held two workshops with the stakeholders on early return to work program. The program that we are developing, as I said earlier on, is intended to assist workers to return to work early, which place much focuses on the obligation on the doctor. Once you receive an injured worker, there must be specific obligations from the treating doctor to the physiotherapist and orthopods if they are to be involved, such that we have an agreed period of time and agreed quality treatment that must be provided, such that that worker can be able to be rehabilitated. And also, we need to have specific obligations for employers, because what we also find currently is that most of the workers who get injured and lose limbs are no longer taken back into employment, because the employer will say that, look, I employed you to do X, Y, Z. Now you're no longer able to do that, so I don't have to work for you anymore. So the early return to work program is addressing all those aspects to say that if somebody is injured at work and is unable to perform those tasks that they were no longer able to perform, the medical side must have obligations to make sure that person is rehabilitated fast. And then the training side, which is the department side, must ensure that appropriate alternative training is provided for new skills in the event where the worker cannot go back to work. But also for employers, in the event that the worker is able to go back, the employer must make available what we call a reasonable accommodation to accommodate that worker. For example, you might have been working on the two legs, but when you come back now, you might be on a wheelchair. So for you to be able to work, the employer must make the surroundings accommodative for that worker to be able to do that. So that thing does not exist currently in South Africa. We have different pieces of legislation that are trying to address that. The Employment Equity Act is on its own there. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act and the Labour Relations Act. We need to integrate that into the compensation fund, together with the program in the Department of Labour called the Sheltered Employment Practice. We also need to re-look into how all these different aspects of the department work together to ensure that the worker benefits at the end of the day. The low light, as I said to you, that we have not been able to finalize, our intention was to finalize this in the last financial year. We have not been able to do that because in the last two workshops, it became very clear that we need an extensive consultation, because the employers have a bigger role to play here, and the medical profession needs to have a buy-in to this thing, because it will change the way now they treat patients. That when you get an injured worker, it's not like a person who fell from a bus and you're treating. When you treat this person, you have a specific obligation to provide particular treatment for this person to get work. And the treatment must be a qualitative treatment that can ensure that this person is not going to have repeated operations. Unlike what we're experiencing now, is that a worker gets injured, the doctor sees an opportunity for more money, so they'll perform endless operations on the person until the person is no longer able to do anything. So the early return to work program provides for obligations on the doctor that before you treat this patient, you must be sure that you are going to give quality service for this person to be able to perform his function. The same turnaround time still remains a challenge. We are not the best. We're lagging behind. I think it's taking us between 70 and 90 days to pay when the medical claims are paying in the region of 10 days to 30 days. So it's a problem. We know about it and we're doing something about it. We had also agreed that we should decentralize the compensation fund because all claims as we speak go to Pretoria. It's unlike the other service of the department where you can access them anywhere in the country in the Department of Labour. So compensation fund you have to go to Pretoria to get your service. So we have been trying to decentralize. That has not been moving with speed. What we have been able to achieve now is that we have been able to link up to the computer for the Department of Labour for people to access information only at the moment. So you can inquire, but we cannot do anything for you. Everything has to be done in Pretoria. We have started a project in TE, Port Elizabeth, where we are processing claims there, and from it we have learned a lot of lessons, and we know what is doable and not doable. And in the next 3 weeks, the 25th of June, I promised the medical fraternity in Limpopo that I'll be opening up a fully fledged operational office in Limpopo as a second pilot project. And we hope that if these two moves with speed as we anticipate, and then we can be able to roll it out to the remaining 7 provinces by the end of the financial year. So those are some of the plans that we have in place. We will require the services of Siemens to help us with IT equipment. I must thank the acting DG. He's been very helpful in approving 127 posts that I'll be able to use in the decentralization process. There is a contact post that we'll use to start a new decentralized function for the compensation fund. I must also indicate that we have been very slow in the implementation of the new IT system, predominantly because our current service provider is unable to deliver. I think this is something that has been in the media for a while. And the National Treasury is reviewing this contractual relationship between the department and Siemens. And we hope that after July, we'll be able to know what we agree with Siemens, whether to proceed with them or to find alternative arrangements so that we can be able to get the systems put in place to deliver the services. On the financial side, as of the end of March 2009, as I've indicated earlier on there, the revenue is anticipated to be in the region of about 4 billion. Investment income, 2 billion. And other income, this is income from penalties and interest that we charge employers for late payment, will be in the region of around 21 million. We anticipate that the benefit that we have paid by the end of the year will be 2.8 billion. And admin cost is in the region of about 447 million. This is something that we have not benchmarked with other role players in the industry. But I think in future we'd like also to benchmark our admin cost to see as to whether we are efficient enough in managing this fund. We anticipate from last year where we had a deficit. This was an accounting deficit. We actually had a surplus, but the actuaries, when they were reviewing our pensions, they discovered that we had under budgeted for future obligations. So they then requested us to put more money to cover future pensions, because we do also pay pensioners. For example, those workers who have completely lost ability to go back to work. So we pay the market patients and also pray to the spouses in the event where they passed away, or to their children. So that aspect of pensions was found to be not fully funded, so the auditors, the actuaries asked us to put more money there. However, this year, the indication is that we may not put more money, so we might end up with a surplus of about 1.3 billion that we would have made. And our investments will rise from 16 to around 19 billion. So the slides that follow, the next one is the graphical presentation of these things. I do not want to bore you with that. I'll immediately go to the issues that might be of the interest of you, the Auditor General's findings. During last year, financial year, the Auditor General disclaimed the financials of the compensation trust. And the reason for disclaiming is not something that was new, but I think it's because this has been happening for over a period of time without any improvement. The revenue generation and collection on the revenue side, he was not able to confirm whether the money that he said we have collected is sufficient or is what we should have collected. If you look at the numbers that I've given you there, we said we collected about 3.2 billion and he was not able to express an opinion on that number. The reason for that, which I agreed with them, which I would have felt that is material incorrectness in assessment and material incorrect debtors. The Auditor General did find that in some of our debtors' books we have credit balances. So if you have a debtor who we are owing, which is an English that is in Chinese, you can't have a debtor that you are owing. You should be owing it. So that was something that he found that they were material. The reason for that is because the way we do the assessment, the employer will send you a return to say about 50,000 workers, the total payroll is so much. I'm in construction. 80% of my workers are on the ground. They are doing the real, and I've got 10% admin. So when we do the assessment, we take those things into account that majority of them are going to be injured because they're carrying bricks, they're doing scaffolding. Now you come back 2 years later and said, but no, there was a mistake. In actual fact, it's 50% in that mean. I'm using machinery now, I don't have many workers on the ground because what they do, they use subcontractors. So we have to revise those numbers. So the revision may result in that we have to refund that so-called data. And if you revise it now, it remains a credit balance, which means that the money we must pay them. But the problem why we're not paying is because we were saying we would like to do an inspection. And to do that, to be able to pay that money, because it's a state money, you can't just pay that. You need to go back and say, is indeed 50% workers now admin and 20% hard workers, hard labor. So that takes time, and the Auditor General is unhappy about that. That we need to resolve this thing. Because we are saying that these people are owing you, but you are owing them. And also another thing, that some of these numbers have been sitting there for 3 years. If indeed you were owing them, they should have taken it to court. Why are they not taking it to court? So these are some of the issues that he's raising to say that we must clean up that challenge. On the claim side, it's the issue of the backlog in the scanning of documents. Once you process the claim, all the documentation is sent and then filed away. And now, when they do their auditing, sometimes they want to satisfy themselves that did you pay the right amount to the right doctor? And now, the challenge is that the quickest way we can show them is through the images on the system. But because all the documents are now lining up to be scanned, it's difficult to pull that document within the time frame that they're asking us. But if it's scanned, it's easy to pull it up. But as long as the thing goes to be scanned, we better to give them the document on time. And I think the reason why for them disclaiming the claim for expenditure is because we were unable to give them those documents within the time frame that they asked us. There was also the unexplained charges arising from treasury functions. I think here basically it was the issue of the bank reconciliation. The fund did not have a policy on bank reconciliations, and as a result the recons were not done timely. And for that reason, if the reconciliations are not done, you cannot confirm the numbers that are sitting in your balance sheet and income statement. So those three were the fundamental reasons why the AG disclaimed the financials of the fund. Now, in trying to address that, we have come up with the strategic plan for the next 3 years, 2019-2012. In that plan, we are saying basically the following, that we need to ensure that we put up a system to be in place to be able to review and monitor our policies so that we don't become outdated. We need to have a mechanism in place to review the tariffs and the premiums that the employers are paying and the tariffs that doctors can use to claim from us. So that is something that has not been well managed, so we are focusing on it. We also want to look at the claims and patient turnaround time. At the moment, we're focusing on claims. We're not looking at patients. So what we are saying that the focus must change. If every return to work, we'll be able to say how many injured workers were injured and how long did it take them back to go back to work. That aspect is not taken into account. So that's the future. In the next 3 years, we want to look into that. We also want to review our business processes. On the finance side, we are talking about budgetary control and monitoring. We have already put a mechanism in place now. We have now appointed a relevant executive manager to begin to manage that part. We also want to develop a computerized system for cash and asset management, which we currently manage manually. We need to align our procurement and acquisition systems in terms of the supply chain management regulation. I think this is one area also where we are found weak. Our procurement processes are not up to standard. We want to ensure that we relook at the revenue collection. As I said earlier on, AG was finding out wanting on the revenue side. Now, what we have done, we have commissioned the actuaries, Alexander Forbes, to relook at the whole collection and premium determination model so that we don't have these revisions that we do annually by employers. So that is in place. The board has approved the new model because it's a simple model. It's short-term insurance-based. What it basically does, it looks at your previous accident record, and it looks into that mean cost that we need to cover from you, and we also look at the investment portion that we must put aside for that particular employer's potential accidents that can happen in the future. It's very simplified. Employers can have it on the network. They can check for themselves how much obligation they have. So, and also it will not allow for revision, because even if you didn't report accidents, it has a capacity to pick you up in the future, and there are relevant penalties and mechanisms that are there in place to correct that. So we have to consult with business to get their buying through NetLex. And once we have agreed, we'll now implement the new model. As I said, we need first to have agreement with business to get that in place. But it's a very simple model. It does away with 60% hard labor, 10% admin people. The simple short-term insurance model that is currently working for other short-term investors. We also want to put in a new risk management system, which we're now in the process of finalizing the tender for the appointment of a risk service provider to manage our risk. On the restructuring, we're talking about improving the working environment of the compensation fund, improving our HR environment, We also talk about the performance management system. We do have a performance management system in the department, but our experience is that it's not working appropriately, in the sense that it's an event-based. It's not a continuous monitoring process. You wait until the review time comes, where you sit with your subordinate and you remind him of the past, and he tells you of the good he has done, and then you agree on the scores and whether he's entitled to bonus or not. But we believe that performance must be reviewed on a daily basis, so that when it comes to review time, it's not a surprise. People know about it. We don't have to fight about what I'm entitled to or not. So those are the things that we want to address in the next 3 years. On the quality and access side of services, we want to improve accessibility, as I said. Also, we want to roll out our processing functions. We also want to make available our services on the network of the department. We also believe that through a customer, customer relationship model strategy here, CRM model, we'll be able to allow for an integrated process where you can call our call center and get all answers without you being referred to many people. We also are looking at developing our IT systems there. We are going to intensify our relationship with our OHS inspectors, and also we believe that we need to develop systems together to be able to integrate with them. So that if there are accidents that have happened and employees reported, we can send them there to go and monitor and check what was the cause of the accident, so they can correct the risk. On the communication side, I've indicated that I think the biggest challenge in all government departments is communicating to the stakeholders. So we've put some specific programs that we think we need to get our communications people to deal with, to be able to communicate better. With that, we hope that we will be able to address the problem that I've indicated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we've got two presentations that are outstanding. So I want the members to guide me. Do we take, and we have to finish at 1 o'clock. We don't have extra time. Now, how do you want us to proceed? Do we take all the presentations at one time and discuss them, or do we discuss them one by one, taking into consideration that you don't have enough time? So, what is that you want us to do? Mr. Ellis?
Thank you. I'm quite concerned about some of these details in this compensation fund. It's a big department, and it's a large amount of the work of this department, and it affects people's lives on the ground. It's not something we should gloss over. I'm very concerned about it. But I also was sitting here thinking about the time, and I looked at my watch and I thought, we're never going to finish. So I don't know how we're going to deal with that. I don't want us to gloss over this compensation fund, because it's extremely important. And the Compensation Commission has been quite frank, and I thank him for that, and he's told us about some of the challenges, and I think we should discuss that. I don't know what the challenges are that are going to come up in his other departments. I certainly hope that they're better, in a better state at the moment. But I really don't want us to gloss over this. Even maybe we must have another extra sitting if we don't get through all of this. I don't mean today. I don't know. But I really don't want to gloss over this compensation fund. It's a really important thing for us to get to grips with. It's got a number of challenges which we've just heard about.
Okay. Chairperson of the ENC Caucus.
Honorable Alina.
Thank you.
Look, I think I agree with the speaker that we really need to discuss this thoroughly and have a clear response to the situation which is affecting people seriously on the ground. Maybe the department must make an undertaking that they will come again, agreeing with the chairperson when they will be invited again. Then we listen to all presentations and then we agree on a follow-up meeting where we can respond to all those presentations, so that we can go and take the report, compare with the presentation, our understanding. I think the commissioner was very fair to give us some guidelines, and we look at where he's proposing the IT to take over from the intensive labor, you know, how we're going to deal with that. So that will be my proposal, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. So the proposal that we should continue and look at the time when we can engage with the department on the issues is supported. Yes.
Do you mean that we're going to take all the presentations today and do all of the questions another day, or do you mean that we're going to do the questions now and then get through the other presentations another day? I'm not sure what you mean.
No. From what you were saying, both of you honorable members, I agree, fully agree with you that you need time to discuss this report, because it's a very serious report, and you, as you have said, it affects a number of people's lives, and we need time. We can't just brush over and pass. We don't know what is going to come in other reports. You might find that in other reports there are also very serious matters that need more time. So what I am saying is that we allow them to continue with the reports, and after these two reports have been presented, then we can weigh whether we take questions in other reports and put this one for a later stage, or we put all of them for a later stage. So,
if I must pursue the honorable member, there is that I should think, let's listen to all presentations and then agree on a later date to come and question, clarify, because at the moment we didn't read the report. If I was listening to the debate when I come in, then later we come and question and put our own recommendation attached to what they have presented and what is our different view on their presentation. Maybe as a committee we meet alone and have our debate, what we agreed upon, and they be called in to come and get our presentation. Thank you.
I think it's quite clear, because as Mama Alina is saying, we can't meet after the department has left or tomorrow and see how do we deal with some of the issues that we have not been able to deal with it because of what we have raised. So let's just listen and see what is that is going to come up from other reports. It may be that the other reports might be discussed. So I think let's continue. And I promise you that we'll have a collective decision as to what we do with the reports at the end of the day. Let's allow them to continue. So the comment, honorable Chikile, are you going to say something different?
Not that much different, Chair. I just want to example the letter statement and just to say we should definitely continue to make a presentation, and after all the presentations, if we do have time to ask some questions, it should depend on the time we have after the presentation. Because the presentation was quite tempting, but the time concerns
Okay, you are right. It's not much different. Let's listen and then we take a decision after that. I agree. Department, the second presentation, please. Mr. Surume. Surue.
Good morning once again, Chairperson and honorable members. Our structure of our presentation is in this manner. We are going to deal with our mandate, our legislative mandate. will GBC vision and mission of the Unemployment Insurance Fund. We look at the key issues, our achievements and challenges. We'll look at our forecast for this financial year, and then we'll do our conclusion. In terms of our mandate, we derive our mandate from two pieces of legislation. The first one is the Unemployment Insurance Act of 2001, that is Act 63 of 2001 as amended. The Act empowers the UIF to register all employers and employees in South Africa, with some exceptions for those employers who employ people who work less than 24 hours a month. The public servants are not covered at this point in time. Also, people who earn commissions are not covered. And this Act empowers us to pay different kinds of benefits, unemployment insurance benefit, which is the major benefit that we pay. We pay maternity benefits, dependent benefits, sick benefits, and also adoption benefits. The other act is the Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act of 2002, which empowers the SARS commissioner to collect monthly contributions from the both employers and employees, and also the Unemployment Insurance Commissioner to also do the collection. Chairperson, the collection is 2% of a salary, and it's not a total salary. There is a ceiling on the salary, and the ceiling at this point in time is 12,478. That is the maximum that we collect. Now, our vision is very clear. We're saying the Unemployment Insurance Fund strives to contribute to the alleviation of poverty in South Africa by providing effective short-term unemployment insurance to all workers who qualify for unemployment and related benefits. We need to indicate here that those who resign from employment unfortunately cannot come and claim the UIF, and that decision was taken collectively with government, business, and the labor movement. Our mission is to, the Unemployment Insurance Fund sees its mission as, for instance, rendering an effective and accessible service to all stakeholders. Effective meaning we need to pay people on time, and we need to pay people quality benefits. We also strive to be a sustainable organization with sufficient reserves. We have achieved this, Chairperson. We don't get allocations from the fiscus, and the fund, the HRS have already indicated that we are fully funded. We also strive to administer the fund professionally. We believe we have been successful in even to doing that also. Our performance for the year 2008 and 9, which is the year that starts on the 1st of April 2008 and ends on the 31st of March 2009. These are the results that we have achieved. We've achieved an increase of contribution collection to the amount of 10.3 billion, and that represents 12.66% increase in comparison to the previous financial year. These results are commendable looking at the current economic meltdown. The payments made to our beneficiaries, the Chairperson, has totaled 3.8 billion, and this is a 1.67% increase compared to the year 2007 and 2008. In 2007 and 2008, the fund paid out benefits to the amount of 2.9 billion. A benefit budget of 3.3 billion was exceeded in this financial year that we are reporting on by 510 million. And this all is attributable to the economic meltdown. For the first time in 5 years, we've exceeded our budget. This indicates that people are actually losing their jobs out there. But fortunately, when they come to the fund, they can get the payments, or their benefits can be paid. We've also succeeded here, Chairperson, with regard to performance. Overall surplus recorded was 9.2 billion. And this is 34.2 8% more than the surplus of the previous financial year. The surplus recorded previously was 6.8 billion. This also, we believe, is a fund good result looking at the situation that is taking place in the country. We have an investment mandate. We invest our money through the public investment corporation. Our money goes into the money market. The stock exchange also invests our money in there. We also invest our money in bonds. And the return on our investment has actually increased from 2.1 billion to 3.4 billion. Now, also, the total value of our assets amounted to 37 billion as compared to 2007 and 2008, where the assets worth was valued 27.8 billion, an increase of 22.1%. And this increase in value is attributable to the investment strategies that the fund adopted and also the increase in collection. One of our key indicators was to reduce overpayment. And this was a thorn in the flesh for the fund. It's a situation where people still receive benefits while they are employed. So says the fund, we pay you as long as you are unemployed. Now, people go back to work and they still come to claim with the fund, which is not what they're supposed to do. But we've dealt with that particular challenge in the sense that we went to receive, or in terms of revenue management and debt collection, we're able to collect 22.2 million was recovered in 2008 and 2009 from clients, as compared to 16.4 million for 2007 and 2008. Now, the system that is implemented to deal with this matter has actually matured, and the improvements are visible. Now, that chairperson is the summary of our results. The increase in our contribution is 12.6%. Our investment income 59.3%. Benefit expenditure has also increased by 81.67%. Our operational expenditure, which includes personal expenditure, goods and services, we can see that it has increased by a figure that is below inflation, which means, as our mission was to administer the fund professionally, we're achieving that by working very hard with less expenditure. Our surplus has increased by 34%, investment by 34.86%. Our technical reserve surplus, the actuaries also tell us every year to put aside a certain amount of money as reserves. The reserves are outstanding. Claim the reserve for those people who have not come to claim. Despite that, we have not paid them, but we need to put money aside. But also, the other one is unexpired premium reserve that we also put aside. And those technical reserves have also increased by 11.52%. Our accumulated surplus by 52, and the total assets by 22.19. In terms of our operations, we've achieved the following. As at the end of the financial year under review, the fund has registered a total of 1.2 million employers on our database. These are our clients. This is a great milestone in ensuring that vulnerable workers are covered and they are protected. However, there is still a lot of work to be done in the taxi industry. We only have 5,000 taxi owners and workers who are registered on our database. And according to our statistics, there is about 400,000 of the taxi employers and employees out there. So we need to work very hard to deal with this matter. When we look at our focus for this financial year, we'll actually deal with those strategic interventions that we'll put in place. We have registered 69,817 new employers on our database for that year, and the total of registered employers by the end of March was 1.2. A total of 194,966 new employees were added on our database. And the total of registered employees on the database of the fund by the end of March was 7.6 million. I need to indicate here that we have domestic workers also covered by the fund, and the total number is sitting at 663,000 of domestic workers that we cover. That is an indication that we also cover vulnerable workers. In responding to the needs of our clients, the fund received claims during the financial year and approved 610,738, and the approval rate is 97% of those claims, and the total claims represent 627,244 clients. In most cases, those claims that are not approved is because people come to claim when they have resigned, or others come to claim only to find that they are not registered with the fund and the contributions are not forthcoming from employers. This is a breakdown of the benefits that we have paid. We see that under unemployment, the last financial year, which is 2008, we paid 2 billion. 2009, we paid 2.8 billion. The increase there is 800 million more than the last financial year. The illness benefit also has increased from 187,381,000 to 211,639,000. The increase there is 24 million more. We also, as I've indicated earlier, pay maternity benefit. The increase there is 77 million, which is the amount, and it moved from 460,237,000 to 533,070,071. We have seen a decline in the adoption benefit, because that's another benefit that we offer, and the decline is about 167,000. Dependent benefit, which we also call a death benefit, there is an increase there from 242,295,000 to 263,866,000, and the increase is 21 million. The total benefits that we've paid compared to the previous financial year is 3.8 billion, and the increase overall is 900 million. And the changes in benefits payment, which is talking about delayed benefits, which are the benefits that take place towards the end of the financial year. For instance, if you receive a benefit on the 25th of March, we have about 5 weeks turnaround time. So obviously, we're going to pay those benefits during the current financial year, the following financial year. But we're also happy that the figure has decreased tremendously from the previous financial year. And we will actually indicate that the reason is because we have decentralized our functions. The claims are happening in labor centers. And the total benefits for the current year is 3.9 billion. We take very seriously the engagement with our stakeholders so that we can actually make them aware of the benefits that the fund offers, and also make sure that the employers, they actually register their employers and pay, and they respect the South African laws. So the fund has embarked on a big marketing and advertising campaign drive with assistance of the GCIS and the SABC, and held 6 fully branded outdoor broadcasting campaigns in the following provinces: the Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng, and also we went to KwaZulu-Natal, and the other provinces were done the year 6-7. The objectives of these outdoor campaigns were to advertise our services at the public open space and serve clients through processing their claims and further educating them about services offered by the fund. The communication section constantly engaged in other stakeholder relations like the advocacy sessions exhibitions when there are meetings of business and labor. Also, during ministerial imbizos, last one is earlier, the minister actually worked with us, where we moved from province to province, talking about the services that the fund was offering, and also talking about the processing functions that were decentralized. And the roadshows will continue throughout the year. In terms of people management, we're talking about our personnel, people that we work with, our staff, and you see the fund values its human capital and strives continuously to develop them. 2008 and 2009, we in the spirit of human capital development, we awarded bursaries to 5 staff members, and the total bursaries is 23. We continue to train and develop all staff, train officials on more than 150 training initiatives and courses. These courses are in the areas of project management, financial management, IT, and human resources. We also develop a workplace skills plan, and we also implement it. And how we implement it is through what we call PDPs, personal development plan, where we train people to be able to carry out their duties in a correct manner. When we look into this financial year and the 2 years coming, these are the strategic goals that we've put forward as a fund. The first one, which is very important, I think is everybody talks about in the country, is the comprehensive social security. Now, the first strategic goal is participate in social security reform, and we provide reports. As part of the process of social security reform in the country, the fund actively participated in the interdepartmental task team meetings, we call them IDTT, that was formed to design and implement a comprehensive social security in South Africa. We have a chairperson already produced 3 reports. The first report talks about strengthening the unemployment insurance system in South Africa. The second one deals with the merits and the demerits of wage subsidies. The other one talks about the institutional arrangement on the comprehensive social security. The fund will continue to explore various improvements to benefits that can assist government in using the fund to provide much needed poverty relief to unemployed workers. Here our benefit structure at this point in time, we pay an income replacement at an income replacement rate of the minimum of 38% and the maximum is 60. Now we want to improve it from 38, the minimum, to 45, and from 60 to 65. And in that regard, we've already done the work with the actuaries, and they have indicated that that is affordable, and that is the other objective of the comprehensive social security, to be able to offer quality benefits to South Africans and all those who qualify. The fund has clear recommendations on the improvement of benefits that will contribute significantly to government's intention of a comprehensive social security scheme. All these recommendations will require legislative amendment, and we are moving ahead subject to consultation with stakeholders. The stakeholders will be business, labor and government, and also the NEDLAC. The strategic goal number 2 talks about building and support schemes to alleviate poverty. Here we talk about job retention and job creation. I need to indicate here that one of the reports on strengthening the unemployment insurance in South Africa, the criticism was given to us was that we are reactive, we only pay benefits. There's no positive intervention on how do we take workers back to the labor market. The first, with the board of the fund, which consists of business, labor, and government, and also the community constituencies that are represented in this board, we plan to assist companies in distress through job creation and retention. Work has already commenced in this area. In our board, we have a team that we call a response team to this economic meltdown. And the fund is engaging with the industrial, and that is not independent, sorry for the spelling, industrial development corporation to strive to drive the scheme through the public investment commission. Yes, Chairperson, the PIC, when you invest money with them, you get not only the financial return, you also get the social return. Now, if you take the money, let's say you take a million and give to them, if that million will create certain amount of jobs, they will be able to quantify it, and they'll say the money that you've given us has assisted so many people, and also in terms of job retention, if workers are about to be retrenched, and through our intervention, then those jobs are actually saved. They'll actually say these are the jobs that have been saved, and they can be quantified. And this is what the board of the fund has been striving to do all along, and they've given this process a go ahead. There's a certain amount of money that has been put aside, but there are some meetings that are taking place between us and the PIC, and they also the minister is informed about this process. The other thing that we just started is the training of the unemployed. The fund is working with the Department of Labor, the Acting Director General, on a pilot project to train the unemployed beneficiaries. This is for the first time that we're doing this. This work, we're piloting it in Gauteng South, which is Soweto, and we're also doing it in Gauteng North, in Atteridgeville. What we are trying to do here is that when people are coming to claim UI, instead of paying them, we actually do counseling to say these are the courses that are available. Do you want to be sent on these courses? And if they agree, because we don't want to force them, then we work together with the ESDS, which is the training component of the Department of Labor, to do that. If this process is successful, we'll actually roll it out throughout the country. We're just piloting it, and the report that we get is that it's going to happen in a smooth manner. The other strategic goal, which is strategic goal 3, is to extend our claim processing capacity. Currently, we have 125 labor centers, and we have 57 processing centers throughout the country. Now, what we are trying to do, the first one, we will be conducting a study on the virtual office concept. The intention is to allow employers, in some circumstances, to pay, for example, maternity benefits and claim from the fund. We are doing this because we don't want people who are on maternity to really come and queue at our labor centers. So we have to get a proof of concept where we can say an employer like Eskom, for instance, can actually pay the benefits and they can get the money from the fund. But we are going to put controls in place to ensure that whatever they pay, we actually can reinvest them. That will actually help people on maternity. And also we look at the death benefits also in that regard, because it happens sometimes that the employer does not, the employee, maybe the family is not aware that there is this benefit that is offered by the fund, the death benefit. Now, if the person, the labor, the worker, passes on, he can come to the employer and the employer can pay, they can claim. Instead of a situation where people say, and we have proof of this, for a long period of time, and they come after 12 months to say, my father was working, has passed on, I was not aware that I need to claim the benefit. But because the fund also has got a period, you need to claim within a period of 6 months. Also, the fund initiated to prioritize the strengthening of processing centers. In 2007 and 8, we managed to increase the processing centers from 14 to 57. And as part of the short-term intervention, we've identified at least this financial year 14 other processing centers that we need to be strengthened and capacitated so that a claim can happen in one office. A person comes and he notices a claim and the payment happens in one office. Nothing goes outside of that office. This is our intention to do that. All other processing centers will then focus on the processing of applications, but a scenario that we call a happy day scenario principle, and the turnaround time on claim applications would improve. If I can explain the happy day scenario principle to you, Chairperson, is that if the employer has made a declaration about the employee, all information is with us as in the fund. When you come, you give us your ID and you tell us that you come to apply. Your application will then be approved immediately there on the spot. But the challenge that we find is that information is not in our system. There's a form that we call a declaration form, which comes from the employer. It's not actually coming on time. And this is some of the reasons for the delay. So we want to push the employers to make a declaration so that we can have 100% 30 days scenario. Strategic goal number 4 is to improve compliance by our employers. The fund will concentrate on non-complying employers who are defaulting on submissions of declarations and contributions. Much attention will be given to the TIC industry because the compliance rate there, as I've indicated, is actually very low. A research will be conducted to determine the reasons for non-compliance and address such with the implementation of a new strategy. We will tap on the capacity of the Department of Labor Inspection and Enforcement Services. We aim to introduce payroll auditors who will form the basis of enforcing compliance within the broader enforcement strategy of the Department of Labor. We also wish to amend legislation to require employers to declare on a monthly basis with annual reconciliation. The penalties will be considered for non-compliant employers. At this point in time, we don't have penalties. That's why employers are actually not complying with the issues of declarations. Number 4 is to improvement in benefits coverage. The fund intends to improve the benefits payable to the client by extending the period from 8 to 12 months, and that will be trying to ensure that our benefits are the quality benefits we offer to employees. We also wish to amend the Unemployment Insurance Act to allow the Minister of Labor, in conjunction with the Minister of Finance, to make changes to the benefits schedules from year to year. In this case, we're talking about the income replacement rate and the credit day calculation. We also, as part of a comprehensive social security, we have the intention of including public servants. For this point in time, they are not, but the report that we received is that they are also falling under the Labor Relations Act, and hence they need to be covered also. But we say before any improvement and coverage are extended, this will be subject to positive predictions from actuarial valuations and legislative changes. Strategic goal number 6, increase stakeholders' awareness and support of the fund. The fund recognizes that it is operating in a very dynamic environment where compliance by employers is paramount and has to respond appropriately to the demands and expectations of the environment. A comprehensive communication strategy will form the foundation from which all needs will be addressed. Various models will be used to inform the public about their rights and obligations with regard to the UIF registration and benefits. In conclusion, we say the fund has appreciated the tenable successes and acknowledges some of the challenges facing the organization, and we continue in our strive to address these challenges those that you've mentioned, non-compliance and having not 100% settlement rate of our claim. In this year, 2009 and 10, we've started to address these challenges in introducing any benefit improvements. The effect on the financial position will be analyzed, both in the short and the long term. We created a balance of models to cover for both good and bad economic conditions in the country. Actuarial evaluations were performed and indicated that the fund is in a sound financial position at the end of the financial year, 31st March 2008. However, the economic turmoil facing the world and the country affects the fund in a negative way because of the looming of losses. We have started to see the turnout of clients in our labor centers. We are dealing with these challenges through the implementation of a social security plan. And this social security plan means if an employer is about to retrench 50 or more workers, then he can come to the fund and talk and inform us. And what we will do as a fund, we'll go to the employer to process claims at their premises instead of the workers coming to our labor center. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. I've been promoted for a few minutes. So, as we've agreed that we'll continue the presentation and see if there is an opportunity to ask questions, but time allowing, can we get the last presentation? Minutes break when you talk about time constraints. There's a okay. They said that consultation hasn't reached the ceiling, I see.
Okay.
Of the National Youth Development Agency, Mr. Andy Lelungisa, and the Deputy Chairperson of the agency as well, Mr. Yeshen Tle. Both of them are they're in their executive position, in executive capacity. We going to make the presentation, the three of us, and we promise you it will not be more than 30 minutes to allow you for 30 minutes of questions and answers. So we will not take that long, but we will be detailed in our presentation.
Next
slide. Perhaps just to say that in terms of our mandate and purpose, we were formed to create a platform for job creation and skills development transfer for young people, youth in South Africa being defined as being between the ages of 18 and 14 and 35 years, as per the National Youth Commission Act. We were established in 2001, and so we've been around now for about 8 years. We've been with the Department of Labor now since 2003. How we measure what we do, translating that purpose into, you know, how do you measure it? We've got 7 key performance areas. One is job creation, which is the primary key performance area, which would be measured in terms of the number of jobs that we created. So the next column really just gives, the first column gives you the key performance area, the second column provides gives the indicator that would be utilized to measure that particular key performance area. The second one is entrepreneur and enterprise development. For example, one of the things that we measure there is the number of businesses that have been established or number of entrepreneurs that we have assisted. And then the third is skills development and community service, which should talk to the impact on skills and also, for example, community services that have been delivered by young people. And then there's another key performance area, which is around information provision and communication. We should look at things like number of young people visiting youth advisory centers, number of young people visiting the website, linkages that have been facilitated, and so forth. And then human resource and capacity development, these are internal measures to measure operational efficiency under the scorecard. Then that will talk to, for example, employee retention and also looking at the quality of service delivery, especially where we utilize service providers. And another measure looking at, again, operational excellence is around effective and efficient resource management. That will talk to, for example, improvement in efficiency measures. For example, look at, because we do land, we look at things like cost to income. We look at, for example, the amount of operating overhead to program expenditure and whether that is showing any improvement or decline. So these are some of the things that we would measure. And we look at customer service, and there primarily we look at satisfaction levels. So we look, for example, at number of complaints received. Are they reducing? The nature of complaints received, are they reducing or are they going up? So that's really how we measure. Obviously, now that we are migrating or having fact with effect, or with the law having been passed that we are now part of the agency, some of these key performance measures would obviously change. But when one looks at the Act and Youth Policy, I think many of them would probably still apply, not going forward. Where you find the funds at this stage is it's a very busy slide, but where you see the big yellow circles, it's really where we've got full service youth advisory centers. What do you find in the full youth advisory centers? Just to proceed maybe what I'm going to say by presenting that if you remember that one of the big issues in the past was around issues of accessibility and visibility, primarily because the fund intended to use service providers, i.e. intermediaries. We then took a decision in 2003 that we would engage and intervene and provide services to young people directly and not go through intermediaries. And so what you then see is that, with the exception of skills programs, many of the services that I'm going to be presenting, we would normally be able to access them through the full service youth advisory center. So what you find there is people working, you're providing the services that I will outline in a short while. You also find where we provide free access to the internet for young people. You'll find meeting rooms where young people who are entrepreneurs can book those meeting rooms to have a meeting with people from outside, etc. So we do have one here on Herenrach Street, which members, maybe at some later stage, you can arrange that you go and visit, because I think normally having empirical evidence and seeing things in action, the story is much more better relayed in that manner. Then we've got what we call Yak Point. We have a partnership with about 63 municipalities where they provide the office and the infrastructure, and the only thing that we would then be expected to provide would be the information technology and communication and some payment of costs for people who are working there. But normally these smaller ones would then be providing referral to the big youth advisory center just to receive applications and so on, but they wouldn't normally be providing services Obviously, the idea here, in as far as the youth development agency is concerned, is that the number of those big yellow ones would increase. So you'll have more full youth advisory centers, you know, going forward. The costs are not small, but it does, they are effective in terms of providing support. Let me dwell briefly into then the type of products and services that we provide. One is under the skills development and transfer. Maybe just to also say that, as you said earlier on, in that in terms of you, that we essentially we do three things: is to train young people, to support young entrepreneurs, and to provide them with information. Those are three things we do. So if anybody asks, what does Nkomongo do? We train young people, or the Youth Development Agency in Transit. We train young people, we support entrepreneurs, and we provide them with the developmental information. That's what we do. Hopefully, that would result in them accessing or being self-employed. So that's in a nutshell how one would summarize the type of products and services that we provide. Starting with the training part, which we refer to as skills development and transfer. One is the National Youth Service Program. This is a presidential program which is aimed at providing young people skills while they provide community service. So one would contrast this, for example, with your learnership, which are mostly employer-based type of training. Whereas here is people are homeless, they require housing. So you then take unemployed young people and then you engage them in the process of building homes for homeless people. So that becomes a community service. But as you build these houses, they acquire carpentry skills, building skills, etc., etc. That goes with that particular sector. We also have young people involved in home-based care and various other sectors. So that's really what this program is all about, the National Youth Service Program. In the past, except for it was compulsory, then we would have had a military service where people would have been compelled to work in military service. So this one is not compulsory. But I do know there are some ambitions and designs towards such kind of dispensation. But that discussion is still ensuing. The second thing we do within skills development and transfer is entrepreneurship education. Here, it's aimed at skills geared towards a change in entrepreneurial attitude. For example, we are teaching entrepreneurship in schools, so that young people, when they finish matric or high school, they have some idea of what does it take to start a business. Now, in the past preceding year, we have engaged 71,000 young people in National Youth Service Project. We are working with 18 government departments that have provided quite a large chunk of funding. For example, the Department of Public Works. We have a program where we are engaging young people in renovating public buildings. So that's, for example, one of programs. And we also have about 40,000 young people who are involved in entrepreneurship education. These are your grade 9 to 11, and entrepreneurship education in schools is offered as part of the Economic and Management Sciences, EMS. So we have a number of over 100 schools that are involved in providing entrepreneurship, with almost 1,000 teachers that are involved as well in providing entrepreneurship education. I think going forward, one of the things that we would like to see is this program now, I think we've targeted enough, like to be absorbed by the Department of Education and be mainstreamed as part and parcel of the curricula within our schools. So that will be one of the things that we endeavor to achieve. We work with an organization that is quite renowned called Youth Build, and we have, they operate in about 250 cities in the US, teaching homeless young people, youth at risk, young people with drug problems and so on, in getting them involved in national service. So that is skills development transfer. And then again, the graduate development program, this is going to change. We had a discussion, in fact, yesterday, because in the past what happened was that we took unemployed graduates and then tried to prepare them for the labor market. So if there were, you know, unemployed graduates in accounting would, for example, work with a provider to train them to get into learnerships in the banking sector, or et cetera, et cetera. But obviously, we have the global economic crisis. Employers are not taking people. The sector that is employing is government. So we had a meeting with Kalama, which is the government training arm, to look at initiating a large-scale public service training program for unemployed graduates, where government has got quite a number of vacancies. I mean, the vacancies rate, which sometimes in some departments, they are as much as 5, 10%, probably even 20%. So you're saying, why don't we then take unemployed graduates, we put them in a graduate preparation program? Yeah, we train them in things like them obtaining driver's license, life skills, pitching up for work on time, and how you conduct yourself in the CV, managing money, because some, if you've been unemployed for 5 years, you know, sometimes you get your first pay and then you don't rock up for work because you're drinking for the whole week, you know. It's not unusual, those things do happen. So preparing young people for the world of work, and that when your boss is harsh, maybe they're being honest and not being racist, and so you must still rock up for work, you know. So that's what happens. This is a program that takes between 2 and 3 months. So we're saying, let's rather focus this entire program towards public service. That if there are vacancies in Parliament, let's train young people to fill those vacancies. And we think through that, we can contribute to the 500,000 jobs that was highlighted in the State of the Nation address, because we think almost as much as 80,000 jobs can be created just by preparing unemployed graduates to get into the public service. So that's a program that we have been running. Now we then go to the next, second part. First we said we train young people, the second thing is that we support entrepreneurs. So this is now in respect of how we support entrepreneurs. Business development services. We have a program which we call the Business Development Support Voucher Program. Really here, what happens is that we have close to 400 consultants throughout the country. And these are experts in developing business plans. These are experts in bookkeeping. These are experts in developing a business plan. Sorry, in developing a website. So all that a young person, in fact, whenever you know that one of the things that we did do was to start focusing on women as well. So here, so women without any age limit, reason being, because that, when you support young people in the communities and you don't support women, you distort power relations within communities. A 20-year-old has got a small business, mother with 40 unemployed. So it creates complex power dynamics within communities. So we started to focus on, despite the fact that women pay better. But I know we are in discussions in terms of in the youth development agency where that such support would continue. Now that the Minister of Women, perhaps that kind of capacity will be shifted to the department that has in information. But here really, we have young people that just walk in and say, I want to start a business. Do you have a business plan? No, I don't have a business plan. We ask them a couple of questions. Well, that's not a good idea. We then say, these are 3 service providers. You choose which one will help you. We then give you a voucher. All that a young person has to pay to get a website or so is 200 rand, and then they will then help you with developing a business plan, and then someone will pay the balance. So this is one of the biggest business support programs in the country. In fact, it is the biggest business support, non-financial business support program in South Africa. And then we also have a volunteer action mentorship. You see the face of a successful entrepreneur there, Herman Mashawa, a self-made billionaire. We went to him and say, we want you to encourage people of your ilk to come and mentor young people for free. You know, just to say, you know, Malaiti, turn over is not profit. When you've got turn over, this is how you must do it. If you fail, you know, you must not be discouraged. I have failed too, you know. So it's a very popular thing. I mean, sometimes we just go into a village and we take people who are successful from that village. We put them on round tables with the young people. And they tell them, oh, no, my name is Andy Delungisa, you know. I also come from a village. I was poor like you. I was eating mozzarella 3 times a day like you. But look where I am today, you know. Just to give young people that kind of encouragement. So if that's what we do with the Volunteer in Action Mentorship Program. And Herman Mashaba, the founder of Black Like Me, is the patron of this particular program. There you can see the numbers just in this current past preceding financial year. 12,000 vouchers were issued. Number of jobs were created. You know, upside Nelson Trade, in fact, insists when you go to them to apply for a business, for a loan, they actually insist that you go to someone to get a business plan. Because they know that at least then you have a good start in starting a business. So that's one of the programs that we're quite proud of, you know, going forward. And then another one is the business development support. In fact, I remember in one parliamentary presentation I was making, after I presented all the support we give to young people, said, you know, it's quite a lot of support, because this is a new intervention that is less than 3 years old, where we said, hey, young people lack social capital. They don't have the relationships that we, the older, you know, generation have. You know, maybe we're in university together, and so on. You remember, that's my new one, I'm saying the older generation. It's relative, you know. But generally young people don't have those relationships. So what we then do is to say, how then do we intervene, use our good name as an organization, as the fund, to actually go and plead with business, please provide opportunities to young people. So for example, in this thing, we went to Nestle. Nestle sells ice cream. We said, look, for your distribution, why don't you have young people selling ice cream in the township and so on. Now, this is a success story, because up until there, for 14 years, successive years, Nestle was not making profit in the ice cream division. We helped them as a fast-moving consumer good to actually penetrate the market. But in the process, plus minus 3,000 young people are on the streets. You see them in Camp Bay, you see them everywhere selling ice cream. The Demadisha will be surprised that, you know, these young people, they make more money than teachers sometimes. You know, they make 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 rand, 6,000 rand net. Of course, they don't pay tax. So, you know, this is a very successful program. You know, where young people just go out, they go to a factory yard, pick up ice cream, they go in the morning, come back, they pay, collect more. You know, and they, you know, you'll see as you drive around, they've got some of the Nestle t-shirts, you know, selling ice cream on the street. So we're quite happy about it. And many of them leave to go and start another enterprise. You know, maybe buy a taxi or do something like that. So it's a very good entry point for young people. MTN, their phone shops, we've got a contract with them for rolling out their phone shops. Hot Dog Cafe, when you go to Builder's Warehouse or Macro, you'll see those young people outside selling hot dogs. You know, selfies. These are just for examples. I mean, there are quite a number of them. I mean, we found, for example, that insurance companies were not using black penalties in the township. So we went to them and say, how can we help you to procure services from black penalties? So we're now training these penalties that are in the township so they can get referrals when they, in terms of teaching for work. So that's just some of the examples that are there. And then the program that we are hated for, and is about the one about mining. I think 7 out of 10 times people complain, oh, my application was rejected. You know? But be as it may, we are the largest funder of young people in this country. The fund is also, and now the Youth Development Agency, is the largest funder of young people in the world. Okay? Second largest is the All Chinese Youth Federation. So, you know, it is a quite a very, very big program. Microfinance is one of the funding areas that we are intervening, 1,000 to 100,000 rand. Just in this past year, 21,809 enterprises were funded. But applications is 5 times that. Right. So obviously, there is quite a huge attrition. And we do think that, I mean, to approve 2 out of 10 applications is not outside the norm. We don't require security. We don't send people back if they are blacklisted, unless we discover that they are habitual defaulters. Because that begins, we must not distort the world as it exists for young people as they will find in the real world. You know, in the real world, you pay. So if you owe somebody before, we say, we have to spend, we owe money for student loans. But we want to give you the loan, but we require you for further funding that you must settle that loan within the next 6 months. Because otherwise, you can end up with a huge non-performing loan culture within the country, which killed the banking system in Malaysia, which killed the banking system in Indonesia, which killed the banking system in China. So we must make sure that as we get young people in the state, we do encourage them to do things as they would expected of them in the real world. And then, of course, the microfinance is where we are primarily focusing, because those are entry areas. As you can see, those are some of the small businesses, some of them, fairs, little fairs, and so on. Then we've got the SME funding, where we go up to 5 million rand. But in the joint venture we have with Old Mutual, the Masisrana Fund, for women, we go up to 10 million rand. But otherwise, our loan goes up to 5 million rand. We've got quite a number of franchises, over 180 franchises that have been funded, your spas, your filling stations, etc., etc., you know, going forward, your fare, and those kind of things. So, just in this year, and we'll come to the, in terms of the past season period, the National Youth Service, you can see the numbers there. There has been a consistent growth in many of these areas. The business opportunities program really was hit by the economic downturn, in terms of your economic opportunity. But another thing was the issue of uncertainty, where people are saying, we are not going to be the youth development agency. We want to wait and see, you know. We're quite committed, but let's see what's going to happen, and so forth. So a lot of them, because of this transition, they've kind of taken a wait and see, but many people are still committed to go forward. And then also, part of the information we provide is about linking people for jobs. And there we have placed over 6,000 people in jobs. Over the last 8 years, I've touched on this in snippets as we were going forward. We've trained over 200,000 young people. We're funding over half a billion rand in funding. Now, and leverage over 2 billion rand in funding, as you can see some of the money that we have raised. By far and large, a lot of money coming also by from government departments. Another thing that we are quite proud of is the fact that next slide is that we were appointed to manage the 2009 Confederation and the 2010 Soccer World Cup volunteer program. So we ran the call center for the local organizing committee. We screened the volunteers. We are placing volunteers. We're training volunteers. We'll also manage the logistics for volunteers. So, the volunteers are going to be seen during 2010 and starting this week. We were responsible for recruiting, training, training them as part and parcel of our National Youth Service Program. So, we are extremely delighted about that particular feat. And hopefully we'll do it. And we've done it with the 2020 World Cup when we were here and so forth. And then again, the large-scale National Youth Service Program. We've spoken about the network that we've created. Next slide. But most important is that we have created a market for learning to young people. You know, when we started with our resident FNB, I literally had to go to banks on our knees and ask, can we please partner with you? Black youth, no security, township. I know, man. Now, we are competing for that business with banks. You know, so we are quite delighted about that. That because, you know, government is there to correct market failure. It's not there to compete with the private sector. And we are quite happy that we have now seen banks entering the market where we are competing with them for loan book coming from young people. So we're quite happy about that. We have a management team that is coherent. We have not never read about us in the newspapers that we stole money, that staff is fighting, or whatever the case might be. So, you know, we've really been able to have a team that is solid and is coherent in place. And we're first and the only development finance institution that has got ISO 9001:2000. So, for example, that is why I will not go into detail about IT, what, and so forth. Those things are solid and in place. And there are areas of improvement here and there. One of the things why we adopted the ISO 9001:2000 is precisely because for you to have international standards, you are verified and certified whether you are in line with the international standards. And we have a worldwide recognized brand, you know, around all over the world. I mean, you know, we get, like for example, we, you know, in the Middle East, you know, the Maktoum family in Dubai and Al Misnak family in Doha, Qatar, they've put together a $5 billion fund for replicating what UIF is doing. And we have been there to advise them in setting up, etc., etc. We're doing that in Zambia. You know, we just received now, we had the Minister of Youth Development in Zimbabwe is saying, please, can you give us advice and those kind of things. So, you know, all over the world, you know, we are getting a lot of delegations coming in to visit the largest donor fund in the world, the Gates Foundation. They were here to visit us about 3 months ago. They're looking at ways in which they can replicate some of the things we do in Latin America and other parts of the world. So we're quite happy, you know, in terms of what has been. But most importantly, we are measured in terms of the number of jobs we created. And we have contributed to this economy in terms of the number of jobs that we have created. We have had challenges, which is funding, branch network was not there, not visible, but we have addressed that. And then we've got the mandate issues now being resolved. And the limited funding, I'm sure every department tells you about that. I think some of the issues will be addressed now, you know, going forward. Going forward, those are the targets that we have set for ourselves. Next slide. All the targets that we have set for ourselves. You know, in this 2009-2010 going forward, we received R1 billion over the next 3 years, 300 million this year, 360 next year, and 340 every year. We actually trying to negotiate that we get most of that funding in this year to allow us for into transition. That show our cash flow projections. We're not going into detail on that. Maybe in conclusion, if members allow, you know, these are some of the key transition activities, and I was going to request creation just to just to take some of the key activities that the fund is going to be undergoing in terms of preparing itself to be part and parcel of the transition.
Madam Chair, honourable members, on behalf of the board, we felt that it would be imperative and indeed necessary and beneficial if we were to highlight some of the key issues relating to the transition of the merger between the National Youth Commission and the Global Youth Fund. From the presentation that you've seen, there are a number of achievements and challenges that have been highlighted. There are also a number of achievements and challenges on the side of the National Youth Commission. And we would want to maybe highlight some of the plans that we have designed thus far, some of the systems that we have proposed, and some of the progress that has been made in terms of the merger between the two institutions in the formation of the new National Youth Development Agency. I will just maybe briefly give an overview of some of the key issues that we have identified, some of the work done, and then the chairperson will touch and conclude with what does the new agency mean for youth development in the country. Firstly, the board was appointed on the 30th of April 2009, and in line with the Act, the board is responsible for coordinating and managing the affairs of the agency and ensuring that the agency is able to fulfill its mandate. The board has thus developed a transitional management plan to guide and provide direction with respect to governance, with respect to management, systems integration of the two institutions, and communication. This is, and in order to perform that, we the board, with respect to its decision making and the policy issues of the organization, has developed and formalized governance board committees. These committees relate to the Executive Management Committee, the Investment and Credit Risk Committee, Human Resources and Remuneration, the Development Committee, and the Audit and Finance Committee. We are in the process of developing charters for each of these committees to ensure that these committees become fully functional within the next 2 to 3 months. New strategies, plans and budgets are in the process of being developed, and this of course is in line with not only the Act but of course the National Youth Policy for 2014. We are also in the process of ensuring the consolidation of current assets and liabilities from both institutions, and in terms of also developing the organizational structure and the restructuring process to ensure that the new agency becomes fully functional with the staff complement that is required to perform all its functions. We are also in the process of rebranding, re-imaging, and providing new communication strategies and partnership management for the agency. This is in an attempt to ensure that the agency is able to firstly offer a more holistic and comprehensive package of services, products and programs in terms of youth development. We know that the Mbombo Youth Fund has been able to deal mostly with skills development, the provision of development finance, and the creation of jobs ultimately for young people. We know that the National Youth Commission has been dealing with high-level policy, lobbying and advocacy work, but the agency must then play a role in providing a more holistic, comprehensive package of services and products, and ensure that we have a seamless integration and responsiveness and sustainability to the needs, interests and aspirations of the country's youth. And so the rebranding, communication and partnership strategies are being formulated in line with that. There's also been the development, we are also in the development of a risk strategy and monitoring and evaluation. Monitoring and evaluation has been a key area of concern, and we are hoping to really develop the systems that are necessary for monitoring and evaluation to take place in the new agency. We're also developing new products, services, and strategies, and developing, in line, of course, with the National Youth Policy, identifying high-priority policy imperatives and strategic interventions. For example, the need for a National Rural Youth Development Strategy that will ensure that we intensify development in rural communities, especially for young people, and that we develop new and innovative solutions to some of the challenges that I experience in the rural communities. That includes, of course, intensifying youth cooperatives, but also includes looking at the provision of, as I said, new products, new services, and new access points for the new agency. We will soon be appointing the team, the high-level administrator, high-level management, beginning, of course, with the CEO, and the chief, including the chief operations officer. The principle that we will be following is that based on a need of ensuring continuity in terms of some of the core values of youth development, continuity in terms of some of the systems and processes that have been working, the arrangements that have been working well, to intensify those systems, intensify those arrangements, but change in at identifying where were the gaps and what were the challenges, and fixing those gaps and addressing those challenges so that we have an agency that is able to be fully functional and operate at maximum capacity. We have developed our management plan is based on a 30-day, 60-day and 90-day plan to be completed by September 2009. Just very briefly, in the next 30 days, we hope to develop a merger integration plan, ensure that we initiate stakeholder meetings, that we appoint a joint consultative forum with representatives from both institutions, and that we arrange visits to both institutions and interact with all staff. So that, and as I said, that is part of our 30, 60, and 90-day program. Some of the work done thus far, we have the Act that is in place. Boards and the subcommittees have been appointed. The chair and myself will be serving as full-time executive directors, and we will be assuming, we have already assumed office. We have established a joint consultative forum,
And we have tried to make sure that both staff complements from the institutions or from Mr. Bombo and from the National Youth Commission are part and actively participate and feel as if they are actually part and parcel of all the processes and all the decisions that are being taken place, that are taking place. And in doing so, this joint consultative forum consists of three representatives from each of the two institutions. An interim CEO has been appointed to lead the transition phase, and that is the CEO from the former Mr. Bombo Youth Fund, Malusi Gikana. We are also trying to ensure that we have the integration at the provincial chapters, the provincial levels, that process is underway with the repealing of the Provincial Act, but also with the amendment of the National Act to include provisional or at least provincial provision for what should the agency, the form and structure that the agency should take at the national, at the provincial and local levels. The launch of the agency will take place on on the 16th of June. That will be in Ekurhuleni, but it will be preceded by events taking place in Soweto. And prior to that, there will be the branding of the agency will be launched on the 15th of June. In terms of what we have also done is that we have had an induction of board members, and a strategic planning session has also been completed to ensure that we are up to date with the progress, gaps, challenges from both institutions, that being the Mr. Bombo Youth Fund and the National Youth Commission. I think the chairperson will conclude with a brief summary of what does this mean, what does the agency mean for youth development in the country.
Yeah, I think now the only thing is one aspect is almost the conclusion. I think in terms of the structure, based on what Yashan, also the presentation which was done also by Comrade Malus, in terms of the structure of the agency, it's going to be a unitary structure, which has been established through the Act of Parliament. In terms of the process which we are embarking on, to make sure that we conclude that the national issues also establish the provincial chapter, also at the level of province, also local, because it's going to be a unitary structure, which is going to cut the vertical and horizontal. It's what we're currently doing. I think I've also highlighted that on the 16th of June, we'll be launching the actual organization, which will be launched by the President of the Republic at Cathedral Hall in the Kopule. It's what we're really currently doing. But I think all the systems are in place, as they've indicated or guided by the National Youth Police, which has been adopted by the Cabinet, which is underpinned by the Youth Industry Strategy, which we will talk about the youth policy derives its own existence from the African Youth Charter, which all of us, which also in South Africa, got the responsibility of ratifying the African Youth Charter. I would say those are the process which really are guiding the matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So what we have to do, members, there's no way that we can ask the department to come back, because also we have time constraints in relation to the budget that is coming up this week. But the option that we have is to come back. The house is starting at 2, it's finishing at half past 3. Spoken to the chief whip, so they say we can leave at half past 3. I'm sure this discussion will not take us more than 2, maximum with the 3 hours, so that we can conclude today instead of asking them to go back and come back. We won't have that time. I don't know how you feel about that, because the time now is 10 to 1. Are there any objections to that suggestion from the members? The house is finishing at half past 3. Then we can meet immediately afterwards. Or we can arrange some, but I'm sure if it is arranged, we can finish at what time do you think it will take? Okay, so the transport will be arranged. It was arranged, so there will be no problem in terms of transport. So, if that's the case, yes, thank you very much. Members of the department, sorry for inconvenience. Chairperson.
Honorable Chairperson, I should think we agree that we'll come at that time, but I should think it's important that next time people, they don't present for an hour, honestly. It doesn't make any material sense. So, like, if in the future the presentation takes 20 minutes or we cut that person, so that people come well prepared and not really go into details. I'm appealing in the future, but we'll come.
Thank you, sir. I was still saying that you will bear us for inconvenience. We know that you'll have to change and make some arrangements. Some of you have to fly back, those who are flying back. But we have to come back and discuss this report today, then calling you back. The lunch is also being arranged. Kakaza will tell us where to go. We are still waiting for somebody to come back because all these things have just been arranged. So we can stick around. And then when it's done, we'll just proceed to where we'll be having lunch. And also, those who want to sit in the gallery, the tickets will be arranged. So that they can sit in the gallery while the house is proceeding. Kakaz will also take responsibility for that. So, okay, we'll be coming back to the same venue. Thank you.
So I'm going to catch your name.
Malosi.
Malosi.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your guided presentation. Your name, please?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.